I invite you now to take your pew Bibles once again and turn to page 129 in the Old Testament, as we'll begin reading in Romans chapter 13, verse 21, and go through chapter 14, verse 4. That's page 129 in your pew Bible. Give you a little bit of background on this particular passage before we read it. Moses had sent 12 spies into the land of Canaan, as God instructed him to do, in order to spy out the land to determine how good it was, to bring back reports to the people. It was designed, this trip was designed for the purpose of encouraging the people and preparing them for what God had promised, not only to them, but to their forefathers. And so the stage is set, the spies have gone out, and after 40 days they come back, and this is where we are. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob near the entrance of Hemon. They went up into the Negev and came to Hebron and Ahadmen, Shimei, and Talmai. The descendants of Anak were there. Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came to the valley of Eshcol and cut down from there a branch with a single cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between two of them. They bred also some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the men of Israel cut down from there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from spying out the land. And they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told them, "We came to the land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Yet the people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the giants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan." But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it." Then the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." So they brought to the people of Israel an evil report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who come from the Nephilim. And we seem to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seem to them." Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness. Why does the Lord bring us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to one another, "Let us choose a captain and go back to Egypt." The word of the Lord. Father, thank you for your word. It's true. Lord, we are here today to look at a situation which we may find ourselves in sometimes. We see the good, but we also see the bad and the ugly. And no matter how much we promise that we're going to serve you, and no matter how many times we see your promises fulfilled, we look and see that then there are giants. May we, Lord, learn today the importance of facing them. In Christ's name, amen. It's been a glorious weekend for Ann and me, and we did see Sharon at homecoming also the other night. It's our 40th anniversary, and we ran into some people at Tocoa Falls during homecoming that we hadn't seen for quite some time. A couple dear friends. We were colleagues in the Jacksonville area back in 1984 to 1986, and he's actually preaching at another church in town, so when I'm finished here, we're splitting over there. We're going to get double doses today. But I just rejoice in that. But one of the things that Terry and Ruth and Ann and I spent some time doing was talking about things in the past and things that we have learned and things that God has helped us to overcome in ministry over the years. And there were some big giants that God allowed us to see conquered. Not because we did it, but because He did it. And I thought it was very interesting that these subjects came up as I had the opportunity to share with you this morning, and this was a topic that I had chosen by God's direction to speak about. So, my message title, if you want to give it one this morning, is called, And Then There Were Giants. When I was young, I used to be small. Actually, believe it or not, I was a scrawny child. I was tiny. I was skinny. I was all of those things, which I am no longer. But when I was small, when I was a young child, I was frightened of anyone I didn't know that was taller and bigger than me. I don't know if that was because of the fact I was blind, I was afraid they'd step on me. I don't know what it was, but I can remember Mom and Dad introducing me to people when I was very, very young, and I would just kind of retreat behind one of them because I was petrified. I just wasn't excited to be around people I didn't know that were big. They scared me. But as I grew older, I began to learn to reason, and I began to understand that they were just big. And I remember one day Mom telling me, one of these days you're going to be big, and some kid will be afraid of you. I didn't care about a kid being afraid. I didn't want to scare anybody. But I was really looking forward to getting big. But as I grew taller, and as I grew bigger, I began to understand that these were not people to fear. But as I grew older and taller and began to reason, I began to learn something else about myself. I began to understand that while I might not have been afraid of big people anymore, oftentimes I found myself afraid of big circumstances. I found myself, when I faced new things, new developing opportunities, or what I perceived even to be as dangers, I feared those circumstances. And I found myself wanting to retreat into my own little world. I remember being taken away at 6 years old to a school for the blind, and I was so excited to get there until my parents left, and I went back to the dorm and realized that I was in a dorm with 20 other six-year-old blind kids who were also trying to figure out things. I was petrified. I was terrified. And I began to understand as I grew older that I was going to encounter many, many things like this. And I didn't know the Lord at the time, and I was really, really one who was really frightened by circumstance. As I've gotten older, and as I now am living for the Lord, I begin to understand the perception of circumstances that we have often is very misguided and very misrepresented. And that's what we see in this account today. And I trust that as I share with you, this will challenge your heart to realize that no matter what circumstance we face, what perceptive giants we are looking at, they are not bigger than God. Now, as we look at the reactions of these 10 spies as they come back, I think we're going to find that we probably, many times, are not unlike them. And we find ourselves in situations that sometimes we want to run and hide from, or we want to just totally avoid. And that's where these spies were. Now, you need to remember this situation they are in. These men, all of these men, had lived as slaves in Egypt. all of these men had been by the Red Sea when God separated the waters so they could walk across on dry land. All of these men had seen the Egyptians drown. All of these men had seen the water come from the rock. All of these men had gathered manna. All of these men had eaten the quail. All of these men had done so many things and seen so many things. I could go on and on and on. All of these men had seen the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. All of these men had seen Moses come down from the mountain. These men had been there when Aaron made the golden calf. These men had been there for all of these things. And were honored to have the opportunity to go in and spy out the land, to see the promise that God had given them, to see it in front of them, to be the first to go among the people. All of these men who were terrified by these giants immediately forgot that if they were close enough to see these giants, the giants were close enough to see them and they did not harm them. That should have said something, but it didn't. All of these men came back bearing the fruit to demonstrate what the land was like. And as soon as they got back in the camp, they fell into denial. They had seen what God had done. They had seen the fulfillment of His promise. They had seen the beautiful land and denied that any of it was possible. How many times in our lives do we come into situations and we've seen God do great things before, but we come up against a circumstance, we try to fix it. We try to take care of things. We try to make sure that everything comes together the way it should, and we don't see God in the picture because it's such a terrible circumstance. The evidence was before the people, but simple denial caused the people not to even look at the evidence, but listen to the words. And with that denial proceeded to doubt, which they planted in the people. If you look at verse 28, and I'm not going to read it again, but if you look at verse 28, you can see that in verse 26 and 27, they gave a glowing report about the land that they'd been in. They showed them the fruit. They showed them all these things. And then one little word, the first word in verse 28, set the stage and changed everything. That word is yet. Other translations, it's nevertheless, or however, or but. Used to know a person at Tocoa Falls when I was a student who had this real thing of saying, and I really dreaded it every time this person opened their mouth, because they'd say, "I love you, but." Isn't that a nice word whenever somebody gives you a positive word of affirmation? When they say but, or however, or yet, what do you know is coming? It's the opposite side, isn't it? Okay, we saw the land, we saw everything, it's wonderful, it's great, here's the fruit, there's lots of beautiful, it's flowing with milk and honey, but there's big dudes in that land. They're huge. The cities are fortified. Everything is just, there's no way we can take that land. I mean, it's there, God showed it to us, it's great, He protected us for 40 days, everything's wonderful, but the people are huge. You know, something I've learned in my life, and that's a seed of doubt rapidly grows into a plant that's hard to kill. You can use that on Facebook if you want. It's not copyrighted. It's amazing, isn't it? If just a little bit of seed of doubt gets into your life, it germinates into something huge. And it becomes a massive problem. I remember at the School for the Blind, they used to line us up for flu shots. And, you know, it's like, you take an 8 or 9 year old kid, the word shot scares you to death, right? Well, there was this one kid at our school. His name was David Snodgrass. That was his name. I didn't make it up. I probably should, because he'd probably sue me. But David was always a really big kid. He was huge. I remember he was a couple years ahead of me in school. And I remember going in and lining up for my shot, and they took the older kids first. And they took David in there, and as soon as they got in behind that door, he started screaming. They said, "We haven't even touched you yet." He said, "I know, but it's going to hurt." And he comes out, and he's moving his arms. Man, that hurt. Every one of us kids was terrified. David thought that was the greatest thing in the world. You know, he scared the little kids. The shot wasn't that bad. But I was afraid. And of course, since they went by alphabetical order, there are a lot of people before T's, and I'm sitting there, and they're all coming in, and they're coming out, and little kids are crying when they come out, the real little ones, you know, and I'm like, this is great. I can't wait. But anyway, it wasn't so bad afterwards, but the point was, I was scared to death, and I remember the nurse literally massaging my shoulder to relax it a little bit. She said, it's going to hurt worse if you don't relax, which made me even more tense. But the point is that I took what David said at face value, and it turned into something that I had to fear, because I just knew I was going to come out of there without a left arm. I just knew it. They were going to destroy me. And this is the way the children of Israel were. All at once, all of this beautiful stuff. Can you imagine? Can you imagine these people standing there and looking at a cluster of grapes so big it had to be carried between two people and a pole? And say, this is just one cluster. They're all over the place. But you'll never get it. You're never going to get it because the people are too big. That's their stuff. We can't have it. And that led to defeat. That's verses 31 through 33, if you will look at it. Because of denial and doubt, the children of Israel considered themselves defeated before they even tried to do anything. They hadn't even seen a giant. Hadn't even been close to one, had no idea how big these giants were. My brother told me one time there's a giant dog that lived next door to us. Had a big bark. I heard it a lot of times. Giant dog. And I was terrified to go out. And finally I went out. I had pictured this dog up to here on me, you know. This collie comes walking out of the yard. The dog was a giant for my brother Dale. If I was scrawny, he was scrawnier. And he was really little. The dog might have been giant to him, but it wasn't that big to me. But the point was, I was terrified of that dog for probably 3 months. I wouldn't go outside if I heard it barking. The people were defeated just like that. The people, the spies said, they're too strong for us. We can't do anything about it. We may as well just give up. So the people were defeated. It was over. How many times are we defeated before we even start because we look at the circumstance and we see it for what it isn't? See, the one thing they forgot was that God promised. And God does not lie. God promised. But they were defeated because of the reports of these men. Now, after all of this came discontentment. That's 14 verses 1 through 3. Have you ever wished you could go back after you look at circumstances and see things ahead of you and you look and you say, I just wish I could go back the way things were. I really wish I could do that. We had an experience this weekend, and I may get the silent treatment on the way home for sharing this, but it's so appropriate. I'm going to risk it because I love you guys. When the owners of the campground told us that we needed to move to higher ground because in the rainy season our spot flooded, Ann and I both did not want to move. We had trees, we had birds, we had all kinds of critters running around our yard. It was like being back home. So they moved us to a site up near the front of the campground where there was little bitty trees. The only birds that come are these little sparrows that mooch our food, you know, but none of the big birds. They like to stay in the woods. And Ann particularly has not been very happy about this move. Oh, I just wish we could go back. And I remember telling her, I'm not going back. We're not moving back. And she kept dreaming about moving back down there whenever the rainy season was over until Friday morning. She looked out and there's a river almost running down the road, and she decided maybe God knew what he was doing. Do we miss that area down by the creek? You bet. Is it worth risking maybe even our lives to live there? No way. So what we learned, and I hope that we both are more content where we are, not to be discontent where God has given us. You see, the point is, Egypt can look mighty good sometimes, whenever what seems in front of you seems too impossible for you to handle. Paul said, I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. It's easy to look back on the children of Israel and say, man, they saw everything that went on. They saw everything that God did. How could they even doubt that God could take care of them? But the truth of the matter is, don't we do the same thing when things get difficult? Don't we want to look back and remember when things were better? You know, don't we get nostalgic? You know, the definition of nostalgia, the Thompson definition of nostalgia, is remembering the good things and not even looking at the bad things around it. Isn't it interesting how the children of Israel remembered the food and the wonderful protection they had and all those great things that were there in Egypt, but they forgot about the whips and the long hours of working, sometimes well after dark, to make bricks so that Pharaoh could glorify himself by building monuments to himself? Isn't it amazing how they forgot the fact that they were to destroy all the male children because Pharaoh didn't want their population to grow anymore? Isn't it amazing how they forgot the fact that it cost so much for them to get out of that situation and they wanted to go back? Isn't it amazing how nostalgically we forget all of those reasons why we left in the first place? So the end result was disruption. They're ready to just scat back to Egypt, get a new leader, and go home. It's all over. But in the midst of all of this, there were two people. In the midst of the denial, the doubt, the defeat, the discontentment, the disruption, stood two men, Joshua and Caleb. We have record of Caleb speaking here, but both of them truly believed that God was more than capable of vanquishing the giants. They'd been in that land too. They saw it. They knew that the giants that the people were facing were not the real giants, but the imaginary ones, the ones they had not seen because of these two people. The end result of all of these things was that not one of those men, except Joshua and Caleb, would live to see the promised land. If you were 20 years old and older, the maximum length of time you were going to live was 60, because God said, before you can go into the land, every one of this generation is going to die. The consequence of not being willing to trust and to follow what God wanted. As the children of Israel listened and reacted to the reports of these 10 spies, they forgot one very important fact. God had promised. And when God promises, He delivered. You see, the 10 spies came back and said, we cannot take these men. We can't take them. There's no way. We can't take them. God never said, you're going to take them. God said, I'm going to deliver them to you. And they forgot. And the people forgot. Even after everything they had seen God do, everybody except Joshua and Caleb forgot. Things get tough. We have been through a couple years of terrible circumstances. COVID has changed the so many things in our world, hasn't it? It's changed us in a lot of ways too. One of the things that God showed me in the beginning of all of this pandemonium that's come, some of it's real, much of it is imaginary. And I don't belittle fears, I don't belittle any of those things, but one thing God taught me that really has been the result of me being sane through all of this is the fact that God is much bigger than COVID. And that my life is in His hands. My dependence is on Him, not on the promises of a politician or a health person or anybody else. it's on God. Do I take proper steps? Yeah, sure. But am I terrified? No. I've seen people that literally will run away from people who, if they sneeze. I've seen people who are petrified, and I understand that. But the point I'm learning through all this for my personal life is the fact that the giant that would destroy me in my morale, in my desire to go forward and serve the Lord and all those things, is something that I am not facing alone, because God is going to deliver me in the way He chooses. And I need to remember that. We face many giants in our lives, don't we? I don't know what your giants are, but how are you facing them? Are you facing them with the courage that God gives you? I learned something many, many years ago when I wrestled. I remember I stood out on the mat one time, and there was a guy in front of me. I was like 5'9", and this guy was like 6'3 or 6'4". We walked out there, and since it was a school for the blind and we were wrestling a bunch of sighted kids, we did what we called tied up, so we put my arm on his, and we were standing there, and I thought, this dude is big. He's huge. As soon as the ref blew the whistle, I retreated. By the way, the match lasted about 8 seconds. Guy plastered me. I was down and out. And I got off the mat, humiliated, knowing the coach was going to kill me. If that guy hadn't, the coach was going to. And for the first time, when I came off the mat, the coach didn't yell at me. He just slapped me on the shoulder and said, "Sam, you don't defeat a giant by running from him. You turn your back, he'll get you. You face it." Brothers and sisters in Christ, that's how we face the giants in our life. You don't retreat. You don't back into a corner. You don't do those things. If God is for you, who is against you? No one. Not even the giants. The children of Israel paid a dear price because they were not willing to trust God. I think sometimes we might be paying prices too, because we forget that God promised. May we always remember that. There may be giants, but God promised.